The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly, with all the big stories that matter this Monday. Liverpool Balotelli, last year's bridesmaids, decide let's get Mario. But will getting an Italian in the club mean a happy event in 9 months' time, etc. and so on? Meanwhile, Man U get an angel for the Red Devils, but after their show at Sunderland, can they get by on a winger and a prayer? There's Arsenal with a big point at Goodison, Spurs QPR, Harry and Rangers stranger danger. There's a mighty look at the Championship, Cardiff Leeds and Fulham rotten with maggots, and all the amazing things that have been happening over on the continent with the Bundesliga starting and arguably finishing inside of 10 seconds. All of that in today's Football Weekly. Off we go then with another Football Weekly today in the company of Monsieur Philippe Auclair. Bonjour Philippe.
Bonjour Jimbo.
John Ashdown. A up, John.
A up, Jimbo.
Yep. And dear Gweet, Barry.
Tough all to road.
Absolutely. And hello to you too, listeners. My word, ever so much to discuss today, as there always seems to be with this incredible phenomenon of football. Philippe, I know you were at the Chelsea game this weekend.
I was.
We'll talk more about that later. Barry, where did you find yourself?
I was at St. Mary's for Southampton West Brom. We probably won't talk about that later.
Perhaps not. It was 0-0, yeah?
Yeah, it was okay, actually.
Was it?
As 0-0's goal, but yeah, right. It was pretty, not a lot of goal mouth action.
Right. And where did your thirst for sport take you this weekend, John?
I was in Birmingham for the Sainsbury's Athletics Grand Prix.
Were you?
Watching Mo Farah break the British 2 mile record.
Great, okay. Fantastic. I bet you found time to see a bit of football in the last couple of days.
Bits and bobs, yeah. In between the javelin throws and the shot putting.
I bet you did. Barry, I imagine you were all over Sunderland Man United Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I was disappointed in the end that Sunderland didn't win. I'd confidently predicted Sunderland to win, and I think they should have won. They were a better team overall.
Manchester United
were
an
absolute shambles. Can't defend. They didn't look great going forward. Their goal was a soft one for Sunderland to concede, and it was very much against the run of play. And I just thought, in the face of such feeble opposition, Sunderland were perhaps a bit overawed by they played against Manchester United's reputation rather than the actual very mediocre team that was lined up in front of them.
Mm. I remember when Man United had a reputation. Funny.
But if they played against the current reputation of Manchester United, surely they should have won.
Wow.
Oh, no, they should have won. Yeah, I mean they played against the reputation of the Manchester United of yore.
Well, so far, two opponents, two bottom half of the table last season opponents, and just 1 point. It is, say stats, the worst start for United since 92-93. And
they won.
Oh, they won that season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there you go. Well, that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is actually rather. A little bit of perspective.
Unlikely to see similar scenarios enacted this time around, although United have responded or are responding by going out and spending an inordinate amount of money on Di Maria. Is this a bit of a disaster in the making? He's a terrific player, but that must be all their transfer budget on a player who isn't the one they need.
Yeah, it is a strange one. You wonder if they've bought them just because they can and he's available rather than that he's the piece of the jigsaw they need. Because I don't really see how he fits into that team at the moment. Have they bought him as a kind of wing back of some sort? I mean, how do they? So they're going to have to change the way they play, or they have played so far, to fit him in. The other areas of the team are the weaker ones. I mean, you know, the difference, I think, if United have got a fully fit side, I still think their first 11 is a strong one. But, you know, with the strength and depth such as it is, nobody else that's hoping to finish in the top four has to play or would be forced to play their equivalent of Ashley Young as a left back at any point. So, it is a very peculiar transfer.
Right. Fair point, John, and well made. When you say they're starting 11, who would be the starting back three then for Man United?
Well, there's...
would it be Jones, Smalling and...
And Rojo would be and the Rojo third, when I you suppose.
Get, right.
You'd have Luke Shaw on the left-hand side.
Right, okay. Right.
Whereas yesterday, they finished the game, it was Jones, Michael Keane and Tyler Blackett.
Yes.
Hardly likely to strike fear into the hearts of any visiting opposition to Old Trafford.
And yet they took the lead through Juan Mata.
Yeah, it was sloppy goal, really.
Right.
And with a bit of luck, actually. But Antonio Valencia did well, probably the only thing he did well in the game, to get down the right flank and get the ball in. And it took a deflection off Lee Cattermole, who was otherwise the standout player on the pitch. He was excellent. And, Mata was on hand. And Mata had done well to motor up from the halfway line to the edge of the six-yard box to slot home.
Mm. All right, well, all sorts of problems then, evidenced by Sunderland's equaliser and the pressure they put on late. Dimery coming in, John, you don't see that changing too much for them. As I suggest, is the price that Real Madrid are going to exact from United, is that going to rule out further substantial transfers? Philippe, what's your impression?
I should think so. I mean, if you look at the net spend of Manchester United over the recent past, it is colossal. Surprisingly so, because everybody thinks that the Glazers have never put any money into the club. But even taking into account Ronaldo's sale to Real Madrid, you realize that they're the third biggest spenders since the Glazers have arrived behind Manchester City and Chelsea.
So do you think that they will still make moves for, I don't know, like Danny Blind's been booted?
Well, as a centre-back, yes, I think is absolutely indispensable. Mm. They have to do something about that.
Daily Blind.
Yes. Well, Danny, they could get for not very much money, I would think. Yeah. I mean, there's a couple of things, perhaps. The names of that back three, won't exactly strike fear in the opponent's minds. I would say one of the satisfactions yesterday for Van Gaal was Phil Jones, whom I thought had a very good game indeed. Yeah, I can hear this silence. He had a very good game, I thought. Also, let's not forget the back three with which Van Gaal took the Netherlands to third place in the World Cup, which honestly was not that much better than what Manchester United have.
Mm.
And also for Di Maria, let's not forget that he played as a midfielder last season for Real Madrid. He didn't play as a winger. He was more of a creative midfielder. And he had been put there simply because there was no place, because Bale was there, Ronaldo was there, and then Benzema, and then you've got to play behind guy. Mm. And he was terrific in that role.
Hmm.
So I still find this despondency around Manchester United rather bizarre.
Right.
And also because of what Van Gaal has done in so many clubs. He's talked about Bayern Munich. We all know that he was, I think, seventh in the league in November or something like that when he took over, and they finished it with a double.
Mm-hmm.
His second season at Barcelona, I think they were 14th after, almost at mid-season. AZ, when they won the title, he'd lost the first two games, conceding 8 or 9 goals. So he's somebody who takes time to bed in.
So where do you think, Philippe, they will end up this season?
I insanely, before the season started, I put them as my favourites for the title. Insanely. I know, another big silence.
Well, but were you taken in by all this hype surrounding Van Gaal?
Well,
there was a lot of hype in the British media.
It is hype.
Is a truly great manager? That's not hype.
But when you look at the tools he has to work with, and I mean that metaphorically, I just don't think the players, four of the back five yesterday, they're young English players, and another one came on for when Smalling was injured. I just don't think they're technically competent enough to work in Van Gaal's system. So unless he brings in more technically competent players, then I don't care how good he is or how good his reputation is. I just don't see how he can make a silk purse out of what at the moment looks very much like a sow's ear.
What do you think now, Philippe? You said before the season started.
Yeah, because I was also in the reinforcements, particularly in defence.
Right. But now that they've bought this player you love so much, Di Maria, who's a terrific player, as we say, but as yet, apart from Roger, nobody at the back. What do you think now?
I still think they will be challenging for the title.
The title of what?
The title. They won't be. They'd finish much higher than seventh. I've no doubt about that.
All
and
right.
And I also think that the absence from Europe is a huge problem when it comes to recruiting new players. It's a huge advantage in the domestic league, as has been proven time and time again in every country in Europe.
All right, okay. They've got MK Dons. Is that home or away? All-knowing producer Ben in the League Cup this week. It's at MK.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a big game already. The pressure's on. What do you think, John? exactly.
Yeah.
Pressure's on, John. What do you think?
I think United will probably beat MK Dons in the League Cup.
Okay.
Third round. Be quite interesting to see what team he puts out, because usually, obviously, you stick in the kids.
Right. But, and this was the situation Moyes found himself on in early on last season, when his early results weren't very good. So he had to start playing the best team in the Cups to try and get a bit of credit and respect.
Yeah, and I think particularly for Van Gaal, because he is trying to introduce this new system, you know, actually using it in matches is probably going to be more helpful for him than, you know, giving the players a rest this time around.
Right.
Okay. I think Van Gaal would get more time than Moyes. He's, as Philippe says, he has a proven track record. And the fans don't seem to be too upset. They're happy to bide their time and give him... Well, he said it will take him 3 months to whip his team into shape. So, you know, he'll get that at least.
Mm.
And there probably will be signs of improvement in that time.
All right. What about Sunderland and the Barini situation, Barry?
Yeah, well, he clearly doesn't want to go there, but is running out of options. So the arrival of Super Mario at Liverpool will push him further down the pecking order. So he needs to make up his mind. There's a loan deal for a season on the table, which he seems willing to take. But Gus Poyet seems to be running out of patience and said yesterday that he needs to make up his mind quickly, because if he's not coming on loan, then they want to get someone else instead.
All right, okay. All right.
But he had a good season there last.
He certainly did.
And yeah, I'd be delighted to have him back.
Good. Also on Sunday, Tottenham Hotspur played Queen's Park Rangers at London's White Hart Lane. And there was much excitement, particularly for that second goal, which figures reveal came at the end of a move which lasted 2 minutes 20 seconds and had 48 consecutive touches from Spurs, you know, before Chedley put it away. That's way too much, isn't it? It's not a good thing, really, is it?
Well, there's a couple of touches from the goalkeeper.
That's kind of like going to bed with Sting or something.
tantric football.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you just kind of want to get on with it, don't you? A bit.
You're basically likening Harry Redknapp's QPR to Trudy Styler.
Yeah. Don't put words in my mouth. Barry. Anyway, well, there you go. So that was very nice from Squirts. How much can we get excited about that level of dominance, about the return to his Roma form of Eric Lamella with his 2 assists in 7 minutes and the general good vibes from Spurs? How much can we take that for granted, given that QPR seemed to be a bit of a shower?
Well, QPR are another team trying to play this five at the back system, and I think poor old Richard Dunn was so traumatised that he got hooked at half time. I read an interview he did in the Irish Sunday Independent yesterday in which he was discussing his new role. And while he was trying to sort of say, look, all it means is I stand, you know, 10 yards or 10 feet further to one side, it's not that big a deal. You could kind of tell maybe it was that big a deal, because when you're used to standing in one spot for your entire career, and he's had a very long career, he's not getting any younger, then it's a big difference. And it's like, even if we're doing the pod, if I don't sit in this chair, it just doesn't feel right.
Actually, you know what? For part two, maybe we ought to do that and just see what happens.
It's a weird thing, but... Yeah, and on Monday Night Football last week. I don't know if
clang.
I don't know if this made it to air, but in the rehearsals, which I was privy to, Richard Dunn was singled out for a lot of criticism, which I thought was quite unfair. Actually, Gary Neville was having a big go at him for A, looking tired. I mean, the man's in his mid-30s, and B, for misplacing one pass. So it was a bit harsh, but apparently he had a mare yesterday.
Right.
I didn't see the game.
Well, you just... His career hasn't really been based on running, has it? That's not... And in a back three, you need to be a slightly more mobile centre-half, and that's perhaps part of the problem. I guess, you know, with all these results, it's always sometimes hard to know how much, you know, how much we can read into it. But Spurs were incredibly impressive. And Lamella for the... Was it the third goal or the second goal where he sort of surged in and then dinked across?
That was the second Chadley goal, the third Spurs goal, yeah.
Absolutely stonkingly good
and
goal.
Eric Dier as well. He's looking quite a useful acquisition.
I can tell you one thing is that... because people are already saying, oh, maybe Eric Dier, you know, will be Kyle Walker's, stand-in. He might actually... But I can tell you one thing is that if he... He had in Portugal when he was at Sporting, people were very much looking at him as being a future Portuguese international in that position.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Producer Ben just saying he's actually played at all levels for England so far. So,
yes, but as you know, that doesn't prevent one from choosing a different team, national team, when you reach the seniors. That's many examples of that.
Now,
is he Portugal qualified then? Is it like a residency? Well,
Residency, because he arrived in Portugal when he was eight, didn't he? And so his whole career is basically, which is why he's such a fine technical defender.
Captain Sporting Lisbon's, or Sporting Club de Lisbon.
Sporting Club de Lisbon. Or Sporting?
Yeah, Sporting's youth teams all the way through, except for under-19s or something like that. But anyway, a real prospect.
Indeed.
Mm. And with QPR. A lot of reports about Harry Redknapp getting booed by QPR fans, supposedly because he waved to the Tottenham fans. Is it perhaps more likely that they were raining catcalls on him for his appalling record, which I think we mentioned actually last week, in the Premier League with QPR? It is now 27 Premier League games. How many wins in 27 Premier League games?
Four.
Four is correct. Conceding 39 goals, scoring 19. His win percentage 15%. Neil Warnock and Mark Hughes both with 20%. So that's not good, I'm thinking. Not good. And he says his team are playing like strangers. Queen's Park strangers, a lot of people are calling them this Monday.
I wonder who was looking at them, looking after them during the pre-season then.
Well,
yeah, so it's, something must have happened.
It doesn't say a huge amount for Glenn Hoddle, who's been brought in as first-team coach, I believe. And, you know, I think not so long ago, people were clamouring for him to get the England job again. Mm. So I suppose it just proves it's like when a player's injured for a long time, you know, their reputation grows and grows and grows. And Hoddle's been out of work a long time, and his reputation has grown and grown and grown.
Mm.
Oh, and just with the waving at the Spurs fans thing. Well, when I first heard that, I thought, oh, what's everybody's... You know, problem. Why are QPR fans booing him? It's only a wave. And then when you actually think about it, like, it's a really stupid thing for him to do when his team are getting battered like that. And he claimed that
Was it after they were several goals down?
They were behind. And he claims that he didn't know where these chants were coming from.
Right.
And you just think, well, how many times during your career have the fans been like demanding that you wave at them when they're on the... You know, who did you think it was, Harry?
Yes.
For goodness sake. I mean, if I was in the away end, I'd be fairly irked, I think.
Right. Right. We can't trust his account. Not for the first time, you might say. All right. Well, QPR, are they going to have... In your big box-o predictions, where do you have QPR finishing? Because some people reckon they were going to be top half on that.
I had them just above the relegation zone.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. It's not a good start, is it? Not a good start. Spurs will be next in action at home to Limassol of... top European, top Mediterranean island, Cyprus. Spurs with 2-1 lead from the first leg.
I think I'm going to that.
Are you going to?
Well, yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hull will also be in Europa League qualification action this midweek.
So I completely missed their first leg. How did they get on against Lokeren?
They lost 1-0 away in Belgium.
Yeah, that bypassed me.
Right. Well, they'll have the
Steve
chance.
Bruce said there were 9 changes, I think, from the team that had played in the Premier League, which is a bit actually surprised me a little bit, because in the qualifier, he actually played a very, very strong side, didn't he, Steve Bruce? And then when it gets even more serious, he actually presented a weakened side. But they said none of my Belgian friends expect Lokeren to go through.
They don't?
No, they don't.
Okay.
How many Belgian friends do you have?
Quite a few, as a matter of fact, yes.
Right.
I lived in Brussels for a while.
Belgians.
There you go.
I'm sure they're very nice people. I just don't know many.
There's good and bad in everyone, Barry, even in Belgium. So basically, Hull will be hosting Lokeren and trying to come back from that 1-0 deficit. Or perhaps not trying to come. I'm not sure what the agenda is there. They are fresh from a 1-1 draw with Stoke, a battling 1-1 draw, given that they played most of that game with just 10 men after James Chester was sent off. Djelovic opened the scoring, Shawcross equalised, and thereby Michael Dawson. It's all go at the KC Stadium, John.
Yeah, and I guess if we're talking about systems, they're the only team that are playing that sort of 3-5-2 with any degree of success and control at the moment, really. Yeah, it was a really poxy goal as well, that Stoke equaliser.
Mm.
But they reverted to four at the back when Chester
after the sending off. Yeah,
right. So that became a 4-4-1? Right. Okay.
Apart, of course, from my friend's lovely Belgian wife, Sarah, and her family, I should probably add.
It's too late, Barry. You revealed your true anti-Belgian agenda. On the pod, confirming many people's long-held suspicions. Have we got time to talk about... No. After this, we will be, though, listeners, so stay tuned.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. When you need to know what's in the news, you turn to The Guardian. When you want to create something newsworthy, you turn to Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog. Getting started takes only seconds. Just go to squarespace.com, and to support this podcast, use the offer code GUARDIAN to take 10% off.
Right. Oh, finally. Monday night, of course, after, because it's Monday kind of lunchtime right now in our world, listeners. But in several hours in our world, Man City are going to be hosting Liverpool, which is a huge game. It was a great, great game of football last season and high hopes for this time around. And very possibly sitting in the stands at the Etihad in his old stadium watching Man City play Liverpool will be Mario Balotelli. Mario Balotelli, whose arrival, which is still not absolutely 100% confirmed at Liverpool, has left opinion, John, as divided as a snake's penis, as I like to say. Snakes famously having, or as top listener Scurvy points out, having indeed a demi-member. There's a split in the pipework which produces two delivery tubes, one on either side of a snake's body. Football Weekly first with all the snake genitalia news. Anyway, Mario Balotelli at Liverpool. On which side of the, you know, snake penis divide do you stand?
I don't know if I've decided yet. You know, I'm still open to be persuaded one way or another.
Let me try and sway your opinion with one or two listeners. Here's Moal Trees, who says Balotelli, Sterling, Sturridge, possibly the most sweeping injection of pace into a side I've ever seen at Liverpool. Balotelli feeding off Gerrard, Henderson and Coutinho, and he puts three dots to add significance to that. It does sound pretty exciting, doesn't it? Here's Yamohid 1990, who says, remember there were also reservations about Daniel Sturridge when he arrived at Liverpool with his bad boy image, so I'm confident in Brendan's ability to manage Balotelli's ego.
I think it's a fantastic signing.
I mean, give the nays now.
Oh,
and then we'll
come
to you with the fantastic signing. Kipax1 says he's done...
You've just been persuaded by that lot, Barry.
Yeah,
now you're gonna be
wait. Kipax1 says he's done nothing since leaving City. He was a kid then. He left to join his team AC Milan. But he's done nothing there except from score penalties. He'll destroy your forward line. He has to be the main man. At City, he made one assist. And, anti-football, though, says that in his first half-season at Milan, he single-handedly pulled them from mid-table obscurity to a Champions League spot. But, yeah, last season he was poor, and at the World Cup he was even worse than that. Good luck to him. Right, that's one kind of in the middle. Barry, which side do you come down on?
I think it's a fantastic signing. Right. You're getting a £50 million striker for £16
million. Mm.
If it doesn't work out, it's no big deal, just get rid.
Hang on, if it doesn't work out, it could basically disrupt what was a very fruitful partnership so far between Sterling and Sturridge, no?
Well, you know, every signing's a gamble. Yeah. I mean, a lot of nonsense has been spoken about. We kind of covered this on Thursday. He gets a lot of grief for various off-the-field activities, which many of them seem to have not even happened. He seems like a good bloke, if a little immature, but, you know, he's only a kid.
All right.
And I think just for what he can bring to the party, and it was pointed out on Thursday's pod that, you know, he can throw hissy fits in the field and sulk and disappear for long periods. So that's not great. But I do think life's going to be kind of difficult from over here, because he is very much going to be under the microscope. Anything he does off the field, however innocuous, is going to be blown out of all proportion.
Has your father ever treated a snake, just out of interest?
I don't think so.
All right, okay. Philippe?
I'm on the same side of the snake as right. Mr. Glendinning here. Mm. I think it is an absolutely terrific signing.
There you go.
And I'd like to point out, I mean, I heard you saying only one assist. Isn't he him who gave the assist for Kun Aguero's goal,
yeah,
which gave the title to Manchester City?
That wasn't
City.
Me. That
Apart
was,
from that, he did absolutely nothing.
That was Kipak.
And scoring as well a double against Manchester United. Mm. And he did
his
absolutely
goals,
nothing.
His I think, course. 9 goals in those in that run into the title. Yeah. Effectively took them there to that championship.
Correct, and at Milan, his return. Yes, he scored a few penalties, but his record there was,
well, he wasn't very good last year. To be fair, I know in
goals
terms,
last year, but his first
six months were good, but last year, and there is a strong case to be made that that was partly because he wasn't getting anything to work with, and that's why he was getting so frustrated, not performing. And at Liverpool, arguably, it's going to be a very different story. However,
24 years old, and also there's the Balotelli that Cesare Prandelli did actually quite good work with. Mm. Why couldn't another manager do the same thing?
Well, did you see the World Cup?
Well, okay, it petered out. That's but remember the Euros.
They got a good game out of him. Yeah, no, the Euros in 2012 were some of his best work. Yeah. Still, Pippo Inzaghi says, you're Christian Vieri tweeting, this is the best bit of business Milan have ever done, selling Balotelli for 16 million. Pippo Inzaghi saying this team will gain in hunger and team spirit with Balotelli's departure. So that was nice of him. Hey. Right, well, best of luck to all concerned. A lot of debate in Italy about who Milan are going to sign with their shiny new 16 million. And, you know, maybe we'll talk about that later on. But right now, let's talk about the big Everton-Arsenal game, which took place Saturday tea time. I bet you saw this, Philippe.
I did.
Right.
Mm.
Now, Everton, one or two questions for them about how they let that 2-goal lead slip.
I think the answer that Roberto Martinez gave was actually the truth.
What did he say?
Well, it's basically a massive drop in energy levels, and which is a problem they had in the first round of the Premier League as well, which shows that perhaps their physical preparation to a new season hasn't been the best.
Mm.
They had a very difficult preseason. If you look at the results they had, it was not good at all.
Mm.
This said, the way they played for the best part of an hour was truly impressive. First half display was magnificent, really.
Also impressive was the way that Arsenal, who traditionally go away to big sides and ship early goals and then collapse in spectacular fashion, this time didn't. They rallied, and most importantly, Wenger abandoned this bizarre decision to try Sanchez as a false nine.
He's convinced actually that Alexis Sanchez can be very effective in that position.
Mm.
And in fact, I think it was at the end of the Emirates Cup when he was asked how he judged Alexis, the Alexis he's seen so far. He said he'd been happier with the Alexis he saw down the middle than the one he saw on the wing, which is a little bit surprising, but that's what he said at the time.
Wouldn't you rather see him playing in support of Giroud?
Yes, absolutely, or on the wing, or in freer role, but it's a bit of a problem at Arsenal. You've got so many players who can play in this creative, supporting positions that you've got to, I don't know, he would normally be a starter, so would you say on the right wing, perhaps? Mm. On the right wing?
You might have one less of those players now, because it looks like Lucas Podolski is going to Juventus, which is an interesting move. Arsenal, though, it is the first point they've taken in an away game against a top six side in almost 2 years.
I did not. Mm.
Wow. Mm. It's a really good point for them, isn't it? I mean, there's not many teams will go to Goodison and win this season, I don't think. So, yeah, it's a really, really good point for Arsenal.
There you go.
And they perhaps should have taken all three. I think nobody's in much doubt that the game goes on for another 5 or 6 minutes and they can score that third goal. The one thing which was a little bit a matter of concern, shall we say, is again the performance of Jack Wilshere in that game. I know he gets a lot of flack at the moment, but I think there's reason. there is reason for him to be the butt of some criticism.
Right.
It's very difficult to see exactly what's wrong with him, but there is something wrong with him. His passing is not as crisp. He seems to be a little bit afraid of doing a certain number of things. And you wonder if it's got to do with these problems, these physical problems, this ankle problem that has dogged him for so long. But he's certainly, because he's had quite a lot of game time recently, and he hasn't really used it as well as he could have.
What did you think of Callum Chambers?
Love him.
Do you?
Yeah. Absolutely.
He's quite raw as well. He gave the ball.
He's 19.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, I don't know. There are players, you see them. You can be wrong. You see them in the flesh for the first time.
Mm.
And when I saw him in his first Arsenal game, which was at the Emirates Cup, I think within 15 seconds, I thought, this guy looks really impressive.
Well, the start of this game, he looked really good as well.
Yeah,
but
he is very good, but he's still quite raw. And he's got, he's very composed. Technically, he's excellent, and he reads the game extremely well.
All right.
Yeah.
Now, they've also got a qualifier for European action, Arsenal, this week. They are at home to Besiktas. That's on Wednesday. Besiktas manager Slaven Bilic will be in the stands after some untoward behaviour in the first game. It finished 0-0, of course, in Istanbul. And Aaron Ramsey will be in the stands as well, after he picked up an actual red card. So Arsenal have never lost, I believe, a qualifying tie in these Champions League.
It was played 12-1-12 until that 0-0 draw.
Right, there you go. But I'd be seriously concerned if, were I an Arsenal fan, because this one really is hanging in on the balance.
Yeah, it was for a 0-0, it was a very open game last week. And it will suit Besiktas if it's open again. I mean, you know, obviously the away goal issue is a thorny one for them.
If Demba Ba's got his scoring boots on, Arsenal could find themselves in the Europa League with Spurs.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't think it'll happen, but it could be quite a nervy night, actually.
I think it will be. Other nervy nights across Europe might include Leverkusen as they host Copenhagen. Leverkusen enjoying a 3-2 lead over the Danish side. Leverkusen also off to an absolute flyer in the opening round of the Bundesliga this weekend. They had to travel to Borussia Dortmund, and lo and behold, the game kicked off. And what did Bayern do?
They scored after
9.5 seconds. Yeah, crazy. A terrific goal from Karim Belarabi. And a lot of people saying that they made it 2-2 in the course of the match. They basically dominated the game against Borussia. And a lot of people saying, well, that's the German title race over, which I don't know. It seems a bit unfair. I don't know why Bayern themselves, who we were talking about the fact that they're highly touted this year, aren't they, with their Roger Schmidt and all that.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway, that was the opening weekend in the Bundesliga. Bayern won their game, but they very nearly drew. Did you see this?
Yes, this is Junior Melander's miss. He'd got on the end of a cross and fired a shot which rattled the crossbar, bounced down and out. And with Manuel Neuer, gone out of the equation, Melander just had the very simple task of knocking it into an empty goal from 3 feet and somehow contrived to put it wide.
It was extraordinary. Yeah. It was extraordinary.
And so Bayern Munich won 2-1.
They did indeed. Do you want to hear an interesting stat?
Go on.
This was the first weekend of the Bundesliga back after a World Cup, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And Bayern beat Wolfsburg 2-1 and Bayer Leverkusen beat Borussia Dortmund 2-0. Uh-huh. Well, the first weekend back after the World Cup in 2010, guess what happened? Bayern beat Wolfsburg 2-1 and Bayer beat Borussia Dortmund 2-0. And the champions that year were Borussia Dortmund. I'm just saying. Okay.
That's you didn't come up with that.
No, I didn't. Yeah. But it's a good stat.
It's great.
Is that Andy Brassel's stat?
No, it's Archie Rintut's stat.
Okay.
Archie Rintut. Remember the name.
Talking about stats.
Oh, yeah.
It has a relation with Germany. Felix Magath.
Ah, yeah.
I was asking Mr. Glendening before the pod. Do you know how many players is used for Fulham?
Wait, I might know the answer to that.
You might know the answer since Boxing Day.
No,
since
I don't know
Boxing
the
Day.
Since Boxing Day. Mm,
that's not a long time ago, is it?
It's
how many players?
8 months.
Yeah. So how many players do you think is used for Fulham?
Must be in the getting on towards must be the 30s.
Okay, 30s here, and
I'll go 48.
You're both wrong. It's 51.
No,
And his comment after the drubbing they got. Said, we've got to change something. We've got to bring in new players.
Well, yeah.
they've got to change something, all right. I'm not sure it's playing personnel.
Might not be the players. All right, well.
That was the great Felix Magath.
That's fantastic. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Championship. Just quickly mentioning that the other Champions League hanging in the balance qualifiers are Celtic Maribor. That was 0-0 in Slovenia. Porto, who scored a goal against Lille, which is not an easy thing to do, in Lille as well, in the first leg. They'll be hosting Lille this week.
Lille were absolutely appalling. It was shameful, spineless, absolutely no desire whatsoever to try and score a goal. And French clubs this season in Europe, I mean, it's a bloody nightmare. Because you're talking about Lille, but we could talk about Saint-Etienne as well, and Lyon, which is Lyon is in a bright state, and so we're all looking at the UEFA country ranking coefficient and thinking, well, we hope PSG is going to go a long way.
Right.
Because it's really not very.
All right. Well, you know, we were going to talk about a championship. Let's talk a little bit about France. Monaco finally got a win in their first
just
game.
Just about,
Falcao with the header there in the game away at Nantes. PSG have dropped points again.
And against at Evian Thonon-Gaillard, honestly. And I know when Zlatan was injured. And when Zlatan is injured, I think the win percentage from for PSG drops from 76 to 42%, something like that. Something ridiculous.
So this is with Cavani up front.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and you look, I mean, of course, it didn't help that Johan Cabaye was sent off. But even then, I mean, Evian Thonon-Gaillard is really not just a favourite, but a cert for relegation. And PSG they do have a problem with starting their season. It's now one win and two draws.
And they're already 4 points off the pace. The pace that's being set by
the mighty Girondins de Bordeaux.
Who are being managed
by
Willy Sagnol.
Absolutely.
He's just doing the business.
Absolutely.
L'équipe's calling them complet, mais pas génial, I think.
It's not bad.
Yeah, that they're basically strong, but nothing special. So are Bordeaux, because they finished down in, what, seventh or eighth last season?
Yeah, well, nobody thinks for a second that Bordeaux is going to be champion. Of course not.
Well, I don't know.
Of course not.
Well, they're already 4 points clear of PSG.
Yeah,
and Monaco aren't at the races.
Well, I don't think, I said before the season started, I don't think Monaco is going to be at the races full stop this season. I'd rather be looking at Marseille, even though it started in interesting fashion, shall we say, for Bielsa. But they finally got a win.
They did.
Didn't concede a goal, which is also quite interesting. But each year you're looking at what's going to be the surprise team, the one which is going to do what Saint-Etienne did a while. But Saint-Etienne now seem to have reached a very decent level, which is good to see. Very good club.
Who's going to be the surprise team then, do you think?
Bordeaux could be it, absolutely.
All right, okay, good. All right, that's French chat then. Tick. Hey, I tell you what we could mention is Nani, who made his debut for Sporting Club de Lisbon this weekend.
Didn't go so well for him.
Didn't go so well, Barry. What can you tell us about that?
He missed a penalty?
Well, not only that, but he insisted that he take the penalty. First of all, he took it off the normal spot kick taker, Adrian, and then, it was saved, but he basically blew it.
Well, if you're ripping the ball out of someone else's arms to take it, you want to be scoring it, don't you?
You do, don't you? And especially if it's a new club, you've just arrived with everybody going, oh, this is the signing of the season, as the Portuguese papers were saying. Probably not going to endear you too much to the rest of the season.
And he got booked, I think, and substituted after 75 minutes or something.
But they got the win, Sporting Club de Lisbon. Anyway, all very exciting. Feels like it's time for another one of those little breaks, and then we'll have more Premier League and more on the Championship. I want to know about the Championship, and I want to know now.
Well, I suppose the big story over the weekend of the Championship was at Elland Road, where, as per usual, and as is going to presumably happen for however long, Massimo Cellino stays there. They were the focus of attention because they got hammered 4-1 by Watford.
In the Italian owner derby.
Very much so. And all the signs were on Saturday night and throughout Sunday, were that he was going to dispense with his manager, David Hockaday, who he'd brought in 66 days previously.
I'm going to admit, I wasn't familiar with the work of David Hockaday prior to his engagement by Leeds.
No,
he'd fired by Forest Green last Christmas, was it?
Yeah, well, he'd been in the back room at Watford and MK Dons and Leicester and Southampton and went to Forest Green. It's his first managerial gig in the Conference. Was relegated in his first season there, but reinstated on the back of financial stuff at a different club. They just escaped relegation on the final day of his following season. Then they finished mid-table. Then in his fourth season there, he lost 6 out of his first 7 games and was dispensed with in October of last year, only to rock up, to everyone's great surprise, at Leeds this summer. And it looked as though his tenure was over.
Why? Is there anything bizarre?
Well, the sort of theory is, I think, is that Chileno is trying to save a bit of cash.
Right.
And he was, reports are that Hockaday's on about a tenth of what Brian McDermott was on. So something like sort of 70, 80 grand a year.
Right.
Rather than,
It's week. Not because, for example, Chileno's worried that his incredible rate of sacking managers, where they're 19 in 10 years at Cagliari, but that figure goes up when you factor in the number of times they get brought back and then sacked again, is actually now being overshadowed by Maurizio Zamperini, his great rival in this very Italian race down at Palermo. There's a possibility. Anyway, that's a terrible result for Leeds. Now, we mentioned Fulham.
Sorry, just to go back to the Leeds thing. Chileno sort of decided to shift the blame, having slept on it, shift the blame onto Giuseppe Belushi, who's sent off. And effed and jeffed a lot about his mistake. And in a ringing endorsement for his manager, he said, maybe he's not a good coach, but I can't say yet.
Oh, there you go. I think the jury's still very much out on Felix Magath, who's, early days at Craven Cottage, where they went to Derby this weekend. A must-win fixture, I think Felix called this one. So how did it go for Fulham?
The jury's out. You mean it's been out of the court for quite a long time.
I think it's one of those juries where, like, Homer Simpson is the only one who hasn't reached a decision, and that's just because he wants to be sequestered in a hotel.
Right. Okay. Well, so a 5-1 thrashing by Derby. Surely this must force the club to act, John.
You would think so. I mean, I suppose if you wanted to make an excuse that it was 1-1 with half an hour to go and it was only in the last half hour that they absolutely crumbled.
Oh, right. But
yeah, that's their fourth defeat on the bounce in the league. He's won 3 in 16 games there.
Right.
They're on the way down unless they change something. And as Philippe was saying, he was saying after the match, that at least one of the good things to come out of the 5-1 defeat was that they now know they need to do something.
Right.
Which
they need to make a change.
Yeah.
They've got Cardiff coming up at the weekend. Cardiff, who are fellow relegatees from the Premier League, who by contrast are doing well, no?
They've had a reasonable start.
They lost.
2 wins out of 4. It's kind of it's the usual mixture. I know the last time I talked about the Championship on the pod, it was after 2 games.
Right.
And Bournemouth and Millwall were the surprise, only 2 teams to have 100% records. Since then, they've collectively played 4 games, lost 3 of them and drawn 1.
All right.
We're still sorting ourselves out, but Forest are looking particularly good at the moment.
Right.
I believe Millwall were particularly unlucky against Rotherham. They lost 1-0 at home to Rotherham on Saturday, and a guy I know who was at the game said it was just a freak result that Millwall were vastly superior, just couldn't score.
Right, well, Stuart Pearce is Nottingham Forest setting the pace with 10 points out of 12. Watford are in second, Norwich third. Thanks, John. We'll be back for more Championship updates soon. But in the meantime, let's talk about, what have we not talked about from the Premier League weekend? How about Chelsea-Leicester? You went to this game there.
I did, yes. And I had to survive 45 minutes of absolute tedium.
Right.
And then had a truly excellent second half.
Right.
And
what was the big difference?
The big difference was the fact
that... Glass of wine at halftime?
As you might know, Chelsea do not serve alcohol in the press bar. They had some splendid assortment of macaroons.
Did they?
Oh, absolutely magnificent.
Right.
And simply this Chelsea started to press higher.
Yes.
Cesc Fabregas played about 20 yards further upfield.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Jose Mourinho simply gave a good bollocking, old-fashioned bollocking to his players who were sleepwalking in the first half against a very, very, very good Leicester side. I was really impressed with them.
He very much set an agenda of how it should be possible to give a team talk 10 minutes into the first half, and you would prevent a lot of games being boring in that way. After the match, that was his thing. It's a shame we can't have a timeout, and I could have sorted this game out.
Like we had, for example, at the World Cup.
Right, but that was
during the hydration break. Mm. Yeah, Louis van Gaal used it.
Right. Should he not be able to communicate those ideas from the touchline there?
Well, he does try to communicate his ideas. I mean, he communicated his ideas to Eden Hazard in particular in no uncertain fashion.
Mm.
Because, you know, Hazard, of course, in the first half had the misfortune of being on Mourinho's side of the pitch, and he certainly heard a few words spoken by his manager. No, completely different in the second half. And with an absolutely monster performance by Branislav Ivanovic, who was man of the match by a country mile. He was absolutely magnificent.
Going forward or at the back?
At the back, really solid, and going forward, at times irresistible.
Yeah.
Is truly, I mean, a monstrous.
He's kind of the not-so-secret weapon, but he gets involved in everything.
Yes, I mean, he scored on the first first day.
And also, I think, was involved in the other goals as well.
He was at the heart of everything that Chelsea did that was really, really positive. Even there was one chance for Cesc Fabregas, the quality of the pass to get Fabregas onto Kasper Schmeichel was actually Fabregas-like. It was that impressive.
Right.
And Chelsea, again, second half, even though they will say that had not Thibaut Courtois made that save from Nugent, it might have been very different. I don't necessarily think so. But that was a momentous save in as much that it confirmed that Thibaut Courtois is going to be Chelsea's keeper for a long, long time.
And what's going to happen to Petr Cech?
Well, one scenario I can imagine is that he's going to bide his time until January and see if he can actually reclaim his place.
Oui.
Who knows what can happen, you know, a suspension, an injury or whatever, a change of mind by Jose Mourinho. And then if he's still number two, he has to leave. I mean, he's far too good to be on the bench, and he's simply not the kind of player who would accept this type of thing. But one thing I noticed, though, I might be wrong, and I apologize to Chelsea fans if that's not the case, but Petr Cech, who's been at the club for 10 years, never doesn't have a song. I don't think he has a song. I never heard his name sung at Stamford Bridge, the man to whom they owe so much. Whereas Thibaut Courtois already had his song at Burnley and again at Stamford Bridge.
How does that one go?
Oh, it's just Thibaut, 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 if you could call that a song. It's more of a slogan. And I thought this is quite strange. Not that they shouldn't sing their keeper's name after he produces a splendid save.
Right.
Far from it. I just thought that the contrast between the two was rather odd.
Well, Chelsea listeners,
If I'm wrong, please tell me.
Is there a song? Let us know.
I've never heard, perhaps because nobody knows how to pronounce Czech.
Well, I guess goalkeepers often get sort of chanted, so-and-so is number one. So-and-so, so-and-so is number one. And
Czech Republic number one
doesn't scan, does it?
No. We love you, Petr. You cracked your skull, now it's better.
Did you just make that up, Barry?
Yeah.
Oh, that's astonishing. There you go, Chelsea fans. Boom. Job done.
But job done for Chelsea.
Yes. And they continue on top of the table while we wait for Monday night's exciting Man City-Liverpool clash. We should also mention Villa-Newcastle, which finished 0-0. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's not mentioned. Saints West Brom, you went to, Barry, and you said it wasn't too bad for a 0-0.
Yeah, it was all right. I don't think fans of either team should have too many concerns. Right. They were both very good in defence. Dusan Tadic looks a real find for Southampton, and Brownie D, West Brom's record signing.
Is it Brownie D or Brownie Day? Brownie Day sounds much more fun.
We'll go with Brownie Day.
Every day is
then.
A Brownie Day in my house. Right.
Brownie Day, yeah.
Brownie Day, yeah.
No.
Just one look at you, I know it's going to be.
We're just churning out the hits here.
And we conclude with the drama of Crystal Palace West Ham. Quite the surprising game, this one, John Ashton.
Yeah, I don't think many people saw West Ham running away with it in quite the fashion that they did. Palace clearly in a bit of a shambolic state and really need to get things sorted behind the scenes there. But West Ham were pretty impressive. I mean, if you want to compare it, say, to Sunderland, perhaps not taking advantage of Man United's problems, West Ham certainly took advantage of Palace's and were pretty worthy winners.
Right, fine goals from Downing and Zarate, who make their way into the Zarate makes his way into the team, thanks to Kevin Nolan's absence, which is going to be a lengthy one. They're saying six weeks. Was this just the way that it happened to be against a managerless Crystal Palace, or is this signs of a bit of a road to Damascus moment for Big Sam Allardyce? Has he gone entertaining on us?
I don't know if I'd go that far.
Right. No. Okay.
But it's a huge week for West Ham. They're, I don't know if you're aware of their Carling Cup tie. It's the first meeting between West Ham and Sheffield United since Tevez and all that.
Gate. You have to say a gate. Ooh. On the end. No. Gate.
Tevez gate.
Yeah,
since,
there, thanks.
Since Tevez gate.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. Apparently, Big Sam made fun of Jacob Steinberg's Converse trainers after the game.
Jacob was rather quick to tweet that. I think he was quite excited about his trainers being singled out by Big Sam.
Distressed trainers.
Right.
Well, that's the game that will be remembered for being probably the only occasion that will ever happen when Carlton Cole, Stuart Downing and Marwan Chamakh all score.
Absolutely.
That's extraordinary.
Right, I just realised we missed an opportunity to make a joke about distressed trainers at West Ham and that being something they're quite used to. God, it's just so slow. Anyway, that's it for the pod. Yeah. There's a whole fresh batch of football on the way midweek, and we'll be looking at that on Thursday. And, of course, ahead to the next round of action, which is the last before an international break. And also, of course, there'll be the end of the transfer window and all that sort of stuff. So it's going to be a bumper show on Thursday. Do make sure you join us for that. Have a great week in the meantime. Many thanks, Barry, John and Philippe and producer Ben and you, listener. We'll see you Thursday.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.